This is a recording for the BBSOAD teleconference with Economic Policy Institute, Tuesday, September 13th, 2011, scheduled for 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of our speaker's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. Instructions will be given at that point on the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. It is now my pleasure to turn this conference over to Phoebe Sillig. You may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's conference call on the census data about income, poverty, and health care for 2010. I have two economists with me today, Heidi Scherholz and Elise Gould, and they will be analyzing the data. I will now turn the call over to Heidi Scherholz.
Hi, everyone. This is Heidi. All right. So this morning's data release was just another reminder of the huge impact of the Great Recession and its aftermath on the families of this country. So we weren't surprised, and I'm sure none of you were, to see the deterioration in income, poverty, and health insurance in 2010. We know the Great Recession ended officially in the summer of 2009, but the labor market continued deteriorating through the end of 2009, and then the modest growth that we saw in 2010 was not enough to compensate for those losses. So we had over 600,000 fewer payroll jobs in 2010 than we did in 2009. The unemployment rate rose from 9.3% to 9.6%. The share of the unemployed who had been unemployed long-term rose from 31.2% to 43.3%, a huge jump. So all of this deterioration in the labor market caused incomes to drop, poverty to rise, and people to lose their health insurance. And I'm just going to jump ahead for one moment. One of the things that the sort of immediately obvious issues this brings up is that there is no relief in sight. Unemployment today is over 9%. It's expected to stay very high for several years to come. So we cannot expect any substantial improvement in the income and poverty numbers for a while. We will go further into depth on today's release, but I first want to make a very quick comment about how the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, or ARRA, affected these numbers. ARRA was passed in February 2009, but it was in the process of ramping up through the end of 2009, so the full impact of ARRA was actually felt in 2010, which is what today's numbers cover. The primary impact of ARRA on today's numbers is through the earnings workers received from the jobs it created and saved. The CBO estimates that the Recovery Act created or saved 1 million full-time equivalent jobs in 2009, and that figure rose to 3.4 million in 2010. So without these jobs, the 2010 income declines and poverty increases would have been much more dramatic. Of course, one of the issues this underscores is the fact that the end of ARRA is a substantial drag on jobs and incomes. And then a quick thing about the direct income supports in ARRA, three major income supports in the stimulus were unemployment insurance, nutritional assistance or food stamps, and tax cuts. Of these three, only unemployment insurance is counted in the income numbers released today, since the income numbers include cash income received from programs like UI but do not include non-cash benefits like food stamps and are measured before payments of taxes, so reductions in taxes are not reflected. But while the unemployment insurance benefits replace a maximum of half of a worker's prior earnings, these benefits, by definition, went to workers who were laid off and who had low chances of quickly finding another job given the state of the labor market. In other words, the UI benefits went to families who otherwise would have seen even steeper income declines, in some cases dropping below the poverty line. Census data show that, Elise, is it 3.2 million people were kept out of poverty because of UI?
That's correct.
3.2 million people were kept out of poverty in 2010 by UI benefits alone, and I'll now turn, clearly Elise knows more about poverty than I do, so I will turn it over to Elise to talk more about the poverty numbers today.
Thanks, Heidi. This is Elise talking now. So I'm going to give you some of the overview of the top line numbers in poverty. And then Heidi's going to talk some about the income numbers, and I'm going to come back to you and talk some about what's happening with health insurance coverage in 2010. For the most part, we're going to be talking about changes from 2009 to 2010, but in some cases, we're also going to be talking about what's happened over the last decade. So the top line numbers in poverty, 46.2 million people were in poverty in 2010. That's up 2.6 million from 2009. What that means is that 15.1% of the population was in poverty in 2010. That's up from 14.3% in 2009. That's an increase of about 0.8 percentage points. So you see a sharp increase there in the number of people and the percent of people in poverty. That's the overall population. If you look at kids, what you'd see is that 22% of children under 18 were in poverty in 2010. That's up from 20.7% in 2009. That means that about 1 million, precisely 950,000, but I'd say nearly 1 million more kids were in poverty in 2010 than in 2009. What that means, that 22% means that between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 children were in poverty in 2010. It's an astonishing number, I think. So when I say poverty, what do I mean? Well, if you look at the poverty rate for a family of four, specifically two parents and two kids, when the Census Bureau names that poverty line, they're talking about $22,113. So in 2010, if a family of four is in poverty, it means that they lived with less income than $22,113. So when we say that 15.1% of the population was in poverty, it means that 46.2 million people live below the poverty line for their family size. For family four, that means about $22,000. Well, there's another measure of poverty that we look at sometimes, and that we call deep poverty, or living below half the poverty line. Again, for family four, that means about $11,000. In 2010, 6.7% of the population lived below half the poverty line, or in deep poverty. That is an all-time high. The closest number to that was last year. It's gone up since last year. Back in 93, the highest it got was 6.2%. It's far higher than its historical trend. It's a very devastating number, I think. If you look at kids in deep poverty, the data today show that 9.9% of children were below half of the poverty line in 2010. That's about 1 in 10 kids living in a family below $11,000 a year. I think it's an astonishing number. So, again, Heidi mentioned a little bit about public policy. While there are millions of people in poverty in the U.S., it's important to note the valuable role of public policy in keeping millions more from falling below the line. Heidi talked about unemployment insurance. It's true that in 2010, 3.2 million people were kept out of poverty by unemployment insurance benefits. We look at another important public policy program, safety net program, Social Security. A 20.3 million people were kept out of poverty by Social Security. That's not only the 13.8 million adults 65 and older, so 13.8 million, almost 14 million elderly adults were kept out of poverty. It also includes 5.4 million non-elderly adults and 1.1 million kids that are kept out of poverty by Social Security. I'm going to turn it over to Heidi Scherholz again to talk about the income numbers.
All right. Thanks, Elise. Looking at income, from 2009 to 2010, median household income adjusted for inflation declined from around $50,600 to around $49,400, a decline of roughly $1,200 or 2.3%. Working age households, so we define working age, everyone, I think, in this will define working age as a household where the householder is under 65 years old. These households experienced even larger declines, since these are the households most exposed to the labor market and therefore most likely to be affected when the labor market deteriorates. The median income of working age households fell from around $56,700 to $55,300, a decline of nearly $1,500. But it's also important to keep in mind that working families are weathering the current economic downturn on the heels of one of the worst business cycles on record in the labor market, the business cycle from 2000 to 2007. Looking over the whole decade, from 2000 to 2010, median income for working-age households saw a decline of roughly $6,300. I just want to repeat that. The typical working-age household now brings in $6,300, or more than 10% less than it did 10 years ago. Of the income numbers released today, I think this one really underscores the human cost of the weak labor market of the last decade. Disparities in income between racial and ethnic groups grew in 2010 as racial and ethnic minorities saw particularly large declines, with African Americans getting hit the hardest. The Great Recession and its aftermath have wiped out all improvements in median black income since 1996 and all improvements in median Hispanic income since 1998. The median black household is now bringing in almost $5,500 less than they did 10 years ago, and the median Hispanic household is now bringing in over $4,200 less than they did 10 years ago. There were losses across the income distribution in 2010, particularly at the very bottom and the very top of the income distribution. In 2010, workers in the middle fifth saw a decline of 0.9% for a total decline of 6.6% since 2007. Families at the low end of the scale have been hit harder, with the lowest fifth losing 3.5% in 2010 and 11.3% from 2007 to 2010. The top fifth lost 2.7% in 2010, but had seen more modest losses the prior 2 years, so the net change from 2007 to 2010 was just a loss of 4.5%. With unemployment expected to remain high for years to come, inequality is likely to increase further going forward, since weak labor markets have a large negative impact on incomes at the middle and the low end of the have a larger negative impact on incomes at the middle and low end of the income distribution than it does at the top of the income distribution. And I will now throw the ball to Elise, who will talk about health insurance coverage.
Great. Thanks, Heidi. This is Elise Gould speaking again. I want to talk about the health insurance coverage numbers that came out today from Census. Two things to keep in mind. One, if you were on the press call with the Census Bureau earlier, you would have heard that much of the data of the last 10 years has been updated. So it's important to look, be aware of those historical trends have changed slightly. And the second thing is, my comments today are all going to be about the under 65 population. Because all Americans, at least 65 years, nearly all Americans, have universal access to health insurance coverage through Medicare, my analysis focused exclusively on coverage rates for the under 65 population. That's the population that relies more on other forms of coverage. Heidi has already talked today about the labor market. As most Americans, particularly those under 65, rely on health insurance through the workplace, it's no surprise that employer-sponsored health insurance continued to fall from 2009 to 2010. Employment-based coverage for those under 65 eroded for nearly the 10th year in the row. There was 1 year with the revised data that it actually went up, but it has eroded nearly for the 10th year in a row, falling 0.7 percentage points from 59.4% in 2009 to 58.6% in 2010. In 2010, 49.1 million people under 65 were uninsured. That's up about 750,000 since 2009. The number of uninsured non-elderly Americans is 12.9 million higher than it was in 2000. Except for one year increase in the employer-sponsored insurance, employer-sponsored health insurance has steadily declined since 2000. The share of non-elderly Americans with employer-sponsored insurance declined declined about 10.5 percentage points since 2000. So in that 10-year period, it fell over 10 percentage points. One thing that's interesting to look at with employer-sponsored insurance is what happened to different age groups, looking at the children, looking at young adults, working-age population, the near elderly. We see that prime working-age adults consistently have the highest workplace coverage, while young adults, those defined between 18 and 24 years old, have the lowest. Losses over that 10-year period were in excess of 10 percentage points for all groups except the near elderly and the young adults. Those near elderly, I'm defining that as 55 to 64, have continued to have high and rising labor force participation rates, even in this economy. That led to lower declines in employer-sponsored insurance. For the younger group, the reason that they didn't see as large declines has to do with health reform. Health reform played a key role in stemming the fall of workplace coverage for young adults. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, commonly known as health reform, included provisions that allowed young adults up to age 26 to secure health insurance coverage through their parents' employer-sponsored health insurance policies. So assuming that parents had employer-sponsored insurance, it gave young adults the opportunity to get on their coverage. This group has had the lowest rates of coverage, employer-sponsored coverage, of anybody. But you see in the last year that their numbers, their uninsured rates, actually fell a significant 2.0 percentage points over the year. So while the number of uninsured people under 65 rose by over 750,000 that I already talked about, the number of uninsured in this young adult category actually fell by 500,000. And I think we can really, we can point to health reform as the reason for these, mitigating these losses. We also know that the Recovery Act of 2009 helped to shore up Medicaid funding in 2010, and that also kept many people from becoming uninsured, particularly the kids. If we look at insurance over the last 10 years, we see declines for kids and for working-age adults of similar magnitudes, about 11.9 percentage points for kids, 10.1 percentage points for working-age population. While we see these similar declines in employer-sponsored insurance for both populations, we do not see them translated in the same way into the numbers of uninsured. Over a greater increase, a large share of kids are covered by public coverage, leading to a decline in the uninsured between 2000 and 2010 for kids. That did not happen for working-age adults. Working-age adults saw an increase, a statistically significant and a very significant economically increase in the number of uninsured and the share of the population who were uninsured over that period. Those are the highlights I have for health insurance.
We can now turn it over for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we would like to open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone now. Our first question will come from Howard Owen, Freelance Star.
Hi, I work for a newspaper in Virginia, and my question is, can you break these numbers down state by state at this point, or are these all just national figures?
That is a fine question. I'll take a stab at it, and Lise might have a little bit of additional information about the health insurance one, but on September, I believe it is September 22nd, the ACS will be released, which is the survey that's replacing the census long form that is now conducted every year, and that's the one the census is moving to for all state and local level analysis. So I think they aren't putting out any state level stuff. We certainly haven't looked at it. I think that the word is to hang on for a couple of weeks until the release of the ACS, which will cover all of this stuff on, I believe, September 22nd. Is that right? Is that how you think?
That's correct. I think the census is encouraging people, when they're interested in state-level data, to look for the ACS, the American Community Survey. However, they do release state-level information. I know specifically on health insurance and the historical tables on the census website, you can get information. And if you have particular questions about any state, I can also help you find that information after this call if you contact me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone now. Our next question will come from David Milberg in These Times.
Do the figures today include anything on the top 1% or top 5% or what happened with them?
Yeah, we have. The highest these numbers allow you to go is to the top 5%. So it will be really interesting when we get other sources of data to really slice up what has happened in the top 5% with income, because there was a surprising drop in income of the top from the top 5%. I've been noodling over theories about why that happened, but I don't have anything really pinned down. I think it may, this is a theory, it may have something to do with, in 2009, the wealthy being able to shift from capital gains, which went way down in 2009, to earnings. So their earnings didn't see big hits in 2009. And then in 2010, the reverse of that, shifting away from earnings, which this survey picks up, and towards capital gains, which this survey doesn't pick up. So there, I cannot figure out why we saw this big decline in the top 5%. That's a possible theory, but that's the finest we have at the top, and it sure would be great if we could get a handle on what's going on with capital gains here, but these data just do not cover that. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
You know what? We can talk offline. That's just one of many theories I have, and I can share with you more
okay.
about this.
I'll give a call back.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Our next question will come from Rod Watson, Buffalo News.
Hi. The figures you've been citing during the conference call, will they be posted on the website anyplace, or where can we get those?
Yes. So we will be releasing a report this afternoon that will cover essentially everything we've talked about, and then we can get you the link to the big census report if you want stuff in the meantime, or if you, we can, how should we do this?
We'll follow up with you afterwards to make sure you have everything you need.
And all besides the reports, another place to look is our new EPI blog, where we have highlighted some of the top line numbers that we talked about on this call.
Okay.
And we'll be also commenting on some further numbers into the afternoon. So it's another place to look.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Larry Swisher, BNA.
Hello, Heidi. I want to ask you about to comment on the impact of men and women in the workplace on these income and poverty numbers and the changes, because we know that there was a bigger loss of jobs among men than women,
mm-hmm.
but women earn less than men typically.
And this is sort of fascinating in these numbers that reversed. In 2010, not the earnings rankings, gender earnings rankings, but the who lost more jobs shifted. It was from 2007 to 2009, men lost many more jobs than women. That wasn't true in 2010. Women lost 854,000, or employment among women declined by 854,000. In 2010, and it declined by 754,000 among men. So there was this shift as, we're seeing that as we've gotten out of the depths of this downturn, men have fared better in the recovery, while women fared a lot better in the depths of the recession. So there's that. Can you ask from there, what's your question again?
So, how did that impact income and poverty in 2010?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. So, how did the particular gender dynamics impact income and poverty? We did not. One thing that's interesting, we did not see a big loss in the prior years. We saw a big decline in full-time, full-year employment, and more of a shift to, an overall decline in employment, but more of a shift from full-time, full-year to part-time and or part-year. That didn't happen this year. We saw full-time, full-year jobs pretty much staying flat in 2010. So the upshot of that is we did not see a big hours decline in 2010. I'm trying to figure out how that the fact that families didn't see big hours decline on top of these employment declines, actually, you know, those that means there's not that additional hit to income. So in earlier parts of this recession, we had seen additional hits to income from not just job loss, but also hours, drops in hours. We didn't see that in 2010, so that's a boost, but we still did see job loss, so families were having fewer earners. I haven't looked at data on this, but with women now facing the lion's share of job loss, it would be interesting to look at if women are more likely to be secondary earners and families experiencing the loss of secondary earners now as we're coming out of the recession. So that could be playing a factor. Do you have anything else to add on this, Elise? I think, you know what, I'll noodle on this question more, and we can talk offline if you want to.
Okay, thank you. Maybe later.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone now. Our next question will come from Isaiah Poole, ourfuture.org.
Thank you. The Heritage Foundation released its own analysis of today's census figures, and part of their report says, quote, "The typical poor American lives in an air-conditioned house or apartment, has a cable TV, a car, multiple color TVs, a DVD player, and a VCR, among other conveniences." Their clear implication there is that poverty in the United States is not really poverty. How do you respond to their line of framing on this?
There's a couple of things. One thing that I think is important is, regardless of how we're measuring poverty or how we think of poverty, one of the really interesting things we're seeing is how that has changed over the last few years. So by their measure, by anyone's characterization of poverty, there's been a huge increase in that since the start of the Great Recession. So that's in relative terms, we're just seeing an impoverishment of millions of people relative to where we were before the Great Recession started. And then the other thing, this is that the comments that they make are interesting to think about and are sort of always brought up to try to kind of make the poverty numbers not look so bad. And I think one thing that is important to keep in mind is that living standards rise over time. So it used to be that kings didn't have indoor plumbing, right? And now everyone has indoor plumbing. So you wouldn't have considered that person to be in poverty hundreds of years ago, but now by our today's standards, they are. So and this is accepted by poverty researchers around the globe. You can look at both an absolute level of poverty, but also a relative level of poverty. So how are the worst off doing in the country relative to how typical folks are living in a country? That's the way researchers look at this question. So by that standard, you know, you have to keep in mind that living standards have risen over time, and that doesn't mean we don't have huge disparities in living standards have risen over time, but that doesn't mean we still don't have huge disparities in living standards in this country, which of course we do.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone now. Well, speakers, at this time, it looks like we have no further questions.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining today's call. Remember, if you have any questions or if you need to follow up with Heidi or Elise to understand something better, please give us a call. Our number is 202-775-8810. That's 202-775-8810, or you can email news@epi.org. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, this conference is now concluded. You may disconnect your phone lines and have a great rest of the week. Thank you.